Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutub.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Ahead of Labor Day, we thought we'd take a look at the MOU that was signed between Malaysia and Indonesia on the recruitment and protection of Indonesian domestic helpers in Malaysia. The MOU also paves the way for the re-entry of Indonesian workers into other sectors in Malaysia. Now, will this MOU be a template for other bilateral labour importing agreements? Our first guest tonight is Ko Yu Ling, independent political economist with Segi Inam Advisors. Yu Ling, the Indonesian ambassador to Malaysia said regarding this MOU, to quote him, said, "The Malaysia-Indonesia MOU is by far the most progressive domestic worker rights document that Indonesia has successfully undertaken with another country." Looking at the MOU, do you agree? Do you agree that this is a progressive foreign worker rights document? What do you think about this MOU?
Well, I think I agree. I mean, it's interesting in terms of its coverage, because an obvious example is the Indonesia-Singapore agreement on domestic helpers. That pretty much focused on the fees and those direct issues, right? And the wages. For Malaysia, it does sound a bit bigger in covering things like a complaint system, and it does talk about a platform to use, which seems likely to cover the contracts to make sure that they're aligned, and even the payment of wages. So that sounds quite substantially having more of a place where presumably Indonesia can look into those aspects as well. Of course, we do wish the MOU would be a public document and it can be cited by a few people so we can, more people really, so we can see more about that.
Yu Ling, is this, document far too long coming? I mean, in the sense that, we could have done much more earlier if we had recognized perhaps the connection between human rights and our ability to trade globally, considering the kinds of problems that Malaysian companies, and just Malaysia as a whole, our reputation for forced labor, and so on and so forth. Do you think this, the lateness of this has a price tag to it?
Oh, it definitely does. I mean, if we look at the earlier situation of the US, I mean, they passed their regulatory changes about 5-6 years ago plus. I remember talking to people in KL about it, but they just weren't interested, right? And then in Indonesia as well, do they recognize that actually Indonesia passed their migrant worker protection law in 2017? So 5 years on, when the US, Indonesia and other places have passed this regulation, guess what? It starts to bite. I mean, US has turned back Malaysian cargo. It's categorized one of our big companies here, in the same breath as sort of stopping, fishing vessels. I mean, it's quite quite a sad context to be in, right? You're sitting beside a fishing vessel kind of category to be, not to be allowed entry. And of course, you've seen at the company level, at the industrial level, to share prices being collapsed because customers are pulling out when the pressure gets tough on these issues. And, domestic workers, it's something that I think people need to have higher regard of because, they're there to help your families. And I think also recognizing that the affordability, can you really afford to pay these people? I mean, Indonesia minimum wages are pretty similar to Malaysia. Of course, there's an issue of whether they can actually achieve that. And I think that's the problem, right? So people come across, they are seen as, I think the mentality in Malaysia is because they are here, it's obvious that they like the way we do things. And I don't think that should be thought about in that way.
All right. On that note of, whether we, we value or we give we correctly value the contributions of domestic workers, whether we can households can afford to pay. There's been some controversy, particularly on the Malaysian side, about perhaps backtracking or watering down a little bit on the commitments of the household income that's necessary, the threshold for household income, the minimum wage discussion as well for how much domestic workers should be paid. Does that signal anything to you? Are you concerned about those signals, Yu Ling, in terms of Malaysia's commitment to enforcing this MOU? Labour rights activists have already raised concerns that perhaps this MOU, while progressive in wording, might in fact be toothless when it comes to enforcement.
Yeah, I can appreciate their scepticism because, I mean, we've had those past MOUs and I think maybe it's been pretty uncertain how things have been implemented. But I feel it is a good starting point in terms of the wider issues which are covered now. And I, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, Indonesia has this protection law, right? So I do believe Indonesia will be monitoring it very, very closely. You know, they have to help their migrant workers. There has been controversy in Indonesia about this. And I think if we look at the statistics on migrant workers, obviously there's a big question mark about how good our statistics are, right? This huge undocumented worker thing. But, you know, on the face of it, we've actually had a decline in migrant workers, including on the domestic sphere, because, you know, Malaysian household incomes have not been going that much up. And I think this is where our economic performance relative to others means that, at least in headline figures, we haven't been able to keep up with hirings. You know, the households here, you know, Bank Negara talks about living wage. Are our own people earning enough to then hire migrant workers and pay their minimum wage? I mean, this is a huge knock-on effect of what households can afford, and are they, you know, getting the right share of the economy in Malaysia?
Yu Ling, domestic workers, I imagine, are a smaller part of the overall set of, you know, Indonesian workers in Malaysia. I believe Indonesian foreign workers number, you know, over maybe 2 million or so. And we see that during their elections, the numbers of people who actually come out here to vote in the elections back home. But I want to ask you this, and for the other groups, right, those in construction, those in plantations, you said there was a lack of interest in the consequences of these laws being passed in the US and Indonesia. What is the reluctance? Is it just that the business model here is based on, you know, low wages and a menial, you know, sort of keeping the industry at that level, a reluctance to innovate, a reluctance to invest? Is that what is at the core of this perhaps lack of foresight?
Yes, I believe so. It's been so easy to get, you know, foreign workers, yeah? Obviously, you know, I mean, historically, I mean, look at the countries, you know, built up of migrants, different migrant groups, you know, whether it was decades, even century ago, you know, people came in to work. And then now, you know, everyone from here and former migrants are hiring other migrants. And then at some point, there's going to be a lack of supply. And do you remember a couple of years ago, they even said that maybe we should be hiring workers from West Africa? I mean, it's just an amazing thing that the business people are, I think, one, highly allergic to the talk of minimum wage. It just gives them hives. And then secondly, the need to keep open the channels of migrant workers. And I think this is where, you know, if you look at rubber gloves, there's talk about, you know, upgrading how they operate so that their users less workers, you know, do you need them shoulder by shoulder packing your rubber gloves, or do you automate those sort of things? And even in the plantations, right? It's like, no, you know, mechanization can't work. And, you know, the worker is still a lot better. So, I mean, in reality, some of them are going to be very hard to automate. But I think we are shifting to a stance where it's more heavily capital intensive factories that work here. I think everyone recognizes that you just can't get workers reliably, and there is a clear trend.
Okay. Well, you know, there were news reports recently talking about, well, highlighting labor practices in Malaysia. I think, you know, talking about how companies are being banned by US customs and other other MNCs around the world over forced labor allegations. I'm just wondering, Yulin, how this MOU regarding domestic workers from Indonesia, might that in any way set a benchmark for the way for the foreign labor market in Malaysia, for the way we perhaps comply with foreign labor rights, human rights around the world?
Yes, I think basically you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you know, this is the, you know, the benchmark. It will be, you know, I think this will should have implications about, say, maybe even the Philippines, right? You know, do they want to raise their expectation of what their domestic workers are going to earn in Malaysia, right? I mean, there's always been maybe, you know, a bit of extra premium or something from the Philippine side. Do they feel that they're on par ahead? They might have demands there. And then there would be knock-on expectations of higher wages for others. There are the anecdotes of that. You know, if you raise your general workers' minimum wage, then, you know, your lower tiers all have to go up. Of course, in reality, we do think that very few are actually on the minimum wage outside domestic workers, i.e. in industrial. But, you know, I think what I talk about, the allergy of the bosses and owners, I think the reality is that they are worried about, you know, the roll-on effects of that. And, you know, we've seen the massive pushback that has come from business and owners on this. I mean, it's
right, Yulin,
heavily diluted now.
Right, Yulin, just in the last minute or so that we have, what would be your argument to Malaysian business and to the government about the need for these kinds of agreements and the benefits of it?
Well, I think the reality is it's a competitive situation of market entry. This seems to be a situation of just protecting your back, right? I think if competitors know Malaysia's vulnerability, I mean, to be honest, I think a lot of these complaints that happen into these systems like the US or where the EU is going to do it, UK, I mean, how many countries have these modern slavery rules, right? Or even for other reasons. You know, quite often I hear from businesses that, you know, I think it wasn't an NGO or activist who complained against me. You know, we actually think it was a competitor. I mean, it's a really nasty place out there in terms of, you know, trade competitiveness. So I know a lot of tension is on activists, but I think they need to be concerned about how they're going to be competitive. And then, of course, companies who do step up and do more, they do lock in big clients. And this is where they then offer value-added products as well. And I think, you know, getting steady contracts to do value-added products and services is also very important pro situation. And I think maybe getting a head start is very important in this.
All right, Yulin, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Ko Yulin from Sugi Inam Advisors there. We're going to take a quick break here and Consider This. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Thanks for staying with Shred and I on Consider This. Now, ahead of Labor Day this weekend, let's continue our look at the MOU that was signed between Malaysia and Indonesia on the recruitment and protection of Indonesian domestic workers here in Malaysia. Anis Hidayah joins us now from Jakarta. She is the co-founder of Migrant Care, an NGO which advocates for Indonesians working abroad. Anis, our two countries signed this MOU following various reports of poor working conditions and abuse of Indonesian domestic workers in Malaysia. I'm just wondering, are you satisfied with the provisions and the processes that have been laid out in this MOU? Will that be enough to protect Indonesian domestic workers from labor rights abuses?
Yeah, thank you. We really appreciate the negotiation between Indonesia and Malaysia about our new MOU to protect Indonesian domestic workers there. And we know that there are some progressive ones that regulate about the rights of Indonesian domestic workers in the MOU, such as rights of holiday, working hours, salary, and then right to pray, and the employer should not be actually the these basic rights. It's really clear in that MOU. So we hope that this instrument will improve the protection between two countries to Indonesian domestic workers there in Malaysia.
Anis, I noticed that you're caught in an Jakarta macet, as we call it. like roads, it's great. The function is to take you from place to another. The question is enforcement, isn't it, ultimately? Are you confident that the enforcement mechanisms are available, that they will have integrity? And is Indonesia going to be watching that space very carefully?
Yeah, actually, in the context of implementation, will be the big challenge between two countries, because based on our experience, the previous MOU, there are a big problem in the monitoring, evaluation, and how make sure that MOU will working effectively. So based on our previous experience, I'm not sure actually how this good MOU will implement and working good. So this is our challenge.
Okay. When this MOU was signed, I think the details, it came as a bit, I mean, because it was so long time coming, the MOU was in discussion and all the details being ironed out, there was a lot of anticipation, particularly among Malaysian employers, to see what was going to be in this MOU. What were some of the conversations that were being had in Indonesia about this? Are people generally satisfied with what's happened, with what was contained in the MOU? Or, was there a lot of anger in the delay of the MOU? What were some of the conversations that were had, Anis?
Yeah, I think in Indonesia, we have a good coordination and communication between a civil society like us and Indonesian government, how to discuss the content of the MOU. So, and why this is delayed for a long time, because the first one, because pandemic. And then the second one, I think the point of negotiation that Indonesian government proposed in that MOU, not respond quick, yeah, by Malaysian government, for example, like salary, working hours, and another rights.
Anis, I know Indonesians go to various countries in the world and work there. Is Malaysia still an attractive proposition for Indonesian workers looking for a job in another country?
Yeah, I think until now, Malaysia is still the favorite one, yeah? How our citizens want to go abroad for work, because we have some similarities such as language, culture, and I think we are close because there are some borders near us, so it's very easy for transportation, yeah, from Indonesia to Malaysia. So why until now, even though Indonesian society understand very well that we have so many problems regarding with the migrant workers, but Malaysia still the first one that being a country that Indonesian migrant workers want to go into.
Right. So, but when it comes to Indonesians working as domestic helpers, particularly in Malaysia, I read a news report that cited the Indonesian ambassador to Malaysia saying that Indonesia is looking to perhaps phase out sending its citizens to Malaysia to work as domestic workers. In fact, they're going to gradually phase out Indonesians working as domestic workers anywhere in the world because domestic workers seem to be particularly vulnerable to abuse and forced labor. Is that something, Anis, that you're seeing a shift? I mean, moving away from domestic workers to perhaps the more formal job sector where there might be more labor rights protections?
I think domestic workers actually referring with the ILO, domestic workers is already being formal workers, yeah, based on ILO Convention 189, decent work for domestic workers. So, back again to how the country giving the protection, not only how to change the sector, yeah, from domestic workers to another sector, but how the country like us, like Indonesia, and the country like Malaysia have the political commitment to protect domestic workers as a workers, not only to change to another sector, but how the commitment is the commitment to protect is really the important one. Then how to change or transfer women migrant workers to another sector than domestic workers.
Anis, speaking of other sectors, because we know there are literally millions of Indonesian citizens working in Malaysia, and I imagine the domestic worker segment is actually a smaller part of that. Are there efforts being made to deal with Indonesians working in construction, in plantations, in factories? Do you know of developments on that score?
Actually, based on the report of the Walkfree, the foundation that doing research for the Global Slavery Index, yeah, the vulnerable sector for workers and migrant workers, not only in the domestic worker sector, but also in the plantation and sea forest, including like in Malaysia, there are so many Indonesian migrant workers working in the plantation. So actually, not only the worst condition in the domestic workers, but also in another sector.
Okay. Anis, in the couple minutes that we have left, I wanted to ask you, I mean, you listed some of the protections that have been listed out, the provisions of this MOU that will be wonderful to help protect domestic workers in Malaysia. But was there anything in there that you found was missing, the perhaps gaps, or you would have liked to see included in the MOU that you didn't see, or that the concessions were not made?
Yeah, I think the missing one is how the one channel system, yeah, and that will be the system that will apply in this MOU, because one channel system is the new one, and who will manage the one channel system is between recruitment agencies in Indonesia and recruitment agencies in Malaysia. We are worried how these two recruitment agencies in Malaysia and Indonesia will have the political commitment to protect, to make sure that the human rights of migrant workers will be the first priority. Because we know that they have another priority, business. Yeah. So we are so worried about the one channel system, also about the meet online system, yeah, that already exists in Malaysia. The system is really vulnerable. How making domestic workers being victim of human trafficking?
Okay, Anis, very quickly, we understand Indonesia is going to an election fairly soon. Will changes in political leadership have an impact on Indonesia's commitment to this, or is it somehow institutionalized?
Yeah, I think since 4 years ago, after Indonesia has the new regulation, a national law number 18/2017 about the protection of Indonesian migrant workers, actually we are not so worried about the new president that will be replacing Jokowi, because we already have the national regulation that better than previous law, and we already have the system, and we already have the like the strategy of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Indonesia that have the priority to protect migrant workers. So I I think who will select as a president, we hope that this is no change, how to make migrant workers as a priority to protect.
Anis, thank you for joining us. Anis Hidayah from the Jakarta-based migrant care there. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Gooden, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching and good night.